Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.podomatic.com. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and all the good people of the world, and welcome to the first edition of Luke's English Podcast for 2012. It's the first one this year, and I think it's going to be a good one. I've got a good feeling about it. I hope you had a very good new year. I'll be talking a little bit about that later. Right now, it's Thursday evening. It's just a normal Thursday evening. I'm sitting here at my desk in front of my window. And from the window, I can see a fantastic view of the centre of London. In fact, I've got most of the centre of London and a large part of West London, which I can see from my window. So I'm just sitting here. I'm looking out at this scene. It's dark outside, but there's lights. All the buildings are lit up. There's lights everywhere, all along the riverside, all along in the city of, in the centre of the city. I can see the London Eye and the Shard, which is a new building, which is currently under construction. I can see the Underground, and I can see the District and Piccadilly lines. They're actually at this point they're overland, so I can see the trains going up and down and in and out of the stations. There are lots of cars driving around here. There's several busy roads nearby, and I can see all of the red tail lights of the cars driving away and the headlights of the cars driving further towards me. And all in all, it's a fantastic view and quite a nice atmosphere. In the sky, there are lots of planes coming over to land in Heathrow Airport, which is one of the busiest airports in Europe. And earlier on this week, I counted 10 planes in the sky. I could see 10 planes in the sky. It was incredible. So I've got a really good view here. And it's surprisingly warm for this time of year. Normally in January, it's freezing cold here, and you close the windows and wrap up warm. But for some reason, at the moment, it's really quite warm outside. I've actually got my window open, so you might be able to hear some street noise. I expect sort of police cars or ambulances might drive past, and you'll hear the sirens. So it's like the typical atmosphere from my living room window here in West London. And so, as I said, Happy New Year. I hope you had a fantastic New Year. I know that the New Year is possibly the biggest celebration around the world. It's probably bigger than Christmas, depending on which country you're in. Here in England, Christmas is a very big big deal, but I know in many other countries you don't really celebrate Christmas, and instead New Year's Eve is the time when you have a really big party or a meal or something like that. Now here, because Christmas is quite a special time, you tend to find that there are lots of parties, and it's actually a week between Christmas and New Year. So within that week, you find that you go to lots of parties because everyone's celebrating Christmas, and you kind of drink a lot, and you eat lots of chocolate and things like that. And then when it comes up to New Year's Eve, you're usually a bit exhausted, a bit bored of partying, and yet you still have to go out because there's a lot of pressure on you to do something, because people are asking you, what are you doing for New Year's Eve? Have you got any plans? And you know that afterwards, when you get back to work, people will be asking you, so what did you do at New Year's Eve? And you feel like you need to have a good story. You need to tell them something that was good, you know, something interesting. Otherwise, you're going to come across as a bit of a boring person. So there's a bit of pressure on you to kind of do something interesting on New Year's Eve. Now, a lot of people go into the centre of London and they go and see the fireworks. But to be honest, I think that's an absolute nightmare, because the city centre in any English city on New Year's Eve is usually an absolute nightmare, because everyone's really drunk. It's just crazy. There's no public transport. All of the taxis get used up. And so everyone's just sort of drunken in the street, and it's a real mission to try and get home, almost like a Mission Impossible, just to try and get home in the evening. So going out is really annoying. It's very crowded and difficult. You could go to a house party, and that's quite common, and that's probably the best thing that you can do on New Year's Eve. If you get invited to someone's party at their house or at their flat, that's a really good opportunity to just sort of have a lot of fun with some close friends, and that would involve like playing some music in the flat. If you choose to stay in, you've got to be careful, because there may be people having parties in your building, so it might be quite noisy if you stay in, but it can be a really nice way to enjoy the evening, just to stay in maybe with your partner or a few close friends or something, and just sort of celebrate the New Year that way. New Year's Day tends to be quite quiet, because most people went to bed very late, and so it's kind of very quiet, and people get up late. Some people have hangovers if they drink a lot. On New Year's Eve in London, we have a big firework display, and this year I saw the firework display from my window, because I can see the centre of town from up here, and it was fantastic. So I hope you had a great New Year as well. I'm just thinking about times when I've been away for New Year, and I was last year I was in Cambodia with my cousin, and we celebrated New Year there, and they had lots of fireworks in the street, and everyone was launching fireworks in the street, and that was great fun. There's lots of loud music and big parties. The year before that, I was in Hanoi in Vietnam, and it was a similar experience. In the center of Hanoi, there's a lake, and on New Year's Eve, everyone just rides around and around and around the lake on their mopeds or scooters. So really, the center of Hanoi is just crazy on New Year's Eve. Lots and lots of mopeds all driving round and round and round this lake. It's amazing. So 2011 was a fantastic year for Luke's English podcast. In fact, it became like much more popular than it was the previous year, and more popular than I expected. In fact, these days, I'm getting between 30 and 40,000 downloads of Luke's English podcast every month. So that's a lot of people. That's 30 to 40,000 downloads every month. That's amazing. And I get lots of messages and comments from people about the podcast, lots of encouragement. And I do get some donations, which I really, really appreciate. And that's fantastic. It really helps me to continue doing Luke's English podcast, because these days it's not really cheap. Now, I have I pay a subscription to Podomatic, and they allow me to store up to 15 gigabytes of data, and they allow me to transfer through broadband 1.5 terabytes of data every month, right? So, but every month I tend to get about 3 terabytes of data, so I'm like double my allowance. I'm going twice over the top of my allowance, which means that basically the website blocks me. Probably around the middle of the month, the website just blocks me, so I can't upload any new content during that time. I have to wait until the end of the month when it gets reset, and then I can upload content. So that's a lot of bandwidth and a lot of storage space, and so I have to pay for that to Podomatic. And so I do have like overheads and costs with Luke's English podcast. So your donations certainly help me just try and pay every month for my subscription, just to allow everyone in the world to be able to access episodes of Luke's English podcast. So I really appreciate that. Thank you very much. So let's see. Now, in this episode, I thought I would share with you some of the conversations and kind of games and things that I typically play with members of my family when we are together at Christmas time. Now, at Christmas in the UK, it's very common for families to get together and they play games with each other. Now, in fact, at the moment, my parents and my family, we really love playing Mahjong. You know, the Chinese game, Mahjong. We play that all the time. My dad's got this Mahjong set, which he brought back from Hong Kong. And we always play that. I don't think we're very good. We're certainly not as good as most, say, Chinese or Taiwanese players. But we really enjoy doing it. It's really good fun. And the Mahjong set is beautiful. All the tiles just look fantastic. So we play Mahjong. We play games like cards and Pictionary and Trivial Pursuit and Scrabble. but we also make up our own games. And sometimes we play speaking games where you have to describe something, for example, in a certain way. Also, when we're together with the family, because we're all quite, let's say, intelligent, opinionated people with things to say about the world, all the members of the family all have a lot of things to say about the world. And so often when the four of us get together, or the five of us, we tend to sort of argue and debate with each other quite a lot. And it's quite funny, I think, because it's almost like we can't have a normal conversation without it becoming some sort of political debate in the middle of it. I suppose, like, my dad is, he's worked for the BBC for many, many years, very intelligent. He went to Oxford University. He's a fantastic professional news broadcaster. He now does training in places like Serbia and various other places, media training. He's also a visiting professor at university in Birmingham. So he's very clever, very well-educated person. My mum is also extremely well-educated. She's got several degrees, and she knows so many things, particularly about history. My brother, of course, went to university, and he's a graphic designer, and he's kind of very in tune with popular culture. And then there's me, of course. I'm Luke from Luke's English Podcast, and I sort of know about stuff in general, you know. Yeah, I just know about some stuff, really, don't I? I am qualified. I've got my university degree and my diploma of English language teaching to adults, and all my life experience, which has made me the kind of wise, incredibly insightful person that you've come to know through listening to Luke's English Podcast. So when the four of us get together, it's usually kind of a bit of an argument. So what I did recently is I recorded us having some conversations and debating a few points. So what I'm going to do is, first of all, play that to you, and you could just listen to us debating various things. And at certain moments, I will pause the recording and just explain some things which we said. So now you're going to hear some kind of family debates and arguments over a number of topics. I hope you enjoy it, and do stay tuned, because I will be explaining some of the language in due course. Thank you very much.
Got a hole in my trousers.
We're talking about the first question I thought I'd pose to us is this thing about language, because we've just been talking about that. Mm. Here's the question: is it okay? What's better, British English or American English?
British English.
Right, Mum. British English. Why?
Because it's correct. It's the correct form of English.
So all the Americans are getting it wrong. They're all speaking wrong, are they?
Well, that's how we feel about it, yeah.
No, it's not. I don't mind. They can speak how they like. Doesn't really bother me.
Okay.
They can spell colour how the hell they like, and they do, goddammit.
some people say that American English is the way that we spoke English when the Americans went over.
Yeah,
mixed with a bit of Dutch.
They spell theatre, T-H-E-A-T, whatever, T-H-E-A...
E-R, as opposed to R-E.
T-H-E-A-T-E-R.
Yes.
And that we spell it T-H-E-A-T-R-E.
We spell it the more European version.
When they started spelling it T-H-E-A-T-E-R, we spelt it like that too, and then... Since then, we've changed.
We've got old French.
I don't know. I don't know why.
Hang on.
It's the Latin origins of the language, isn't French. It?
Let Dad clear this up.
We theatre, R-E, like centre, R-E,
yeah.
Centre, and other R-E's are French usage. And,
right.
Of course, the English language in the Isles of Britain are... a whole collection of imports from the other parts of Europe. From Scandinavia, from France, from Germany, and from other places.
Right, okay.
And so when the Americans spelt it theatre, E-R, we always thought that they just couldn't spell. But, I mean, as simple as
and
that.
And so in the end then, what's the score? What's the situation? Is E-R okay? Dad, what do you think?
I don't think it matters at all. More interesting is the way people speak as opposed to what they spell. And
right.
I think that there is clearly in Britain a very strong feeling that American English is sloppy and not correct.
But why, though?
Now,
why is it not correct?
I'm saying that there is a view But it's not logical. Language isn't logical.
Mm.
If language was logical, we would have correct spellings for everything.
Right.
Our spellings are completely crazy, and we don't follow the grammar.
Right.
Language isn't logical. But I'm just saying there is a very strong feeling in Britain that, say, American English isn't the authentic version.
Oh, okay, so basically British are just racist towards the Americans.
No, I think it's because of standards, Luke. Standards.
Oh, it's just different. People always see differences and they always see their way of doing things as the right way. But personally, I don't really mind. I mean, they've got a different culture to us.
I think
it's a very similar culture, but very different. It's, you know, it's two cultures united by
a common language.
Divided by a common language.
I think that it's...
They can do what they want.
I reckon a lot of British people are just snobbish.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. About, you know, they're like, it's, you know, we're British and we speak English, therefore we do it correctly, and the Americans speak our language and they corrupt it and bastardise it.
The only thing that bugs me is when Americans tell me that I'm saying things wrong.
They bug that's you? That's an Americanism.
Yes, and I accept American language. I don't have a problem with it. I just don't like being told I'm doing it wrong.
Mum, are you ready to reassess your position on this whole American-British-English thing?
No.
No, you still think the Americans are basically doing it wrong?
Yeah.
And the British are doing it right?
Yeah.
Even though more people in the world speak American English than British English.
So you think they're basically inbred redneck cowboys, basically. That's what you think, isn't it?
Okay.
Because they're the latest...
They're just stupid, aren't they?
No, it's their empire. They have been imperial over the last...
That's coming from an English person.
But they have spread their language throughout their empire in the same way that we spread our language throughout our empire.
Not quite the same, is it?
Our language was the original one.
Not quite the same thing, though, is it? Our language has evolved. There's no such thing as a set language. Both languages have evolved separately.
Yeah.
Our language is totally different now than it was even 50 years ago.
But maybe what the Americans speak...
So you can't say that they're wrong and we're right. They've both evolved in separate
tangents. Maybe what the Americans speak should be called American and what we speak...
Well, it's called American English.
It's called American English.
Okay.
And ours is called British English.
Okay.
Well, I think it's a very interesting subject because language does reflect culture and culture and language are intertwined.
Well,
the point is that America's culture has been built on enterprise, individuality...
And guns.
And go-getting guns. They see the language as being something that you can improvise, you can play with it. It's a kind of instrument you can play with. Whereas the language in the UK... is regarded as being a traditional thing. We're much more traditional.
It's basically considered to be owned by
the French. Are the same.
But it's the royal family.
The Queen's English. The Queen's English is not a concept that everyone recognises.
Not even the Queen speaks the Queen's English.
I agree. No, what I'm saying is that if the Americans like to embroider their language and they like to make transport sound more important by calling it transportation, or instruments more important by calling them instrumentation...
Instrumentationalisationism.
And so on. And they quite like to embroider the language. The culture back home is precision, precision, precision. And the most respected writers are the ones that do things absolutely pared down.
Efficient.
To basic, very, very... efficient.
According to who?
All
writers from Hazlitt to Austin
to Shakespeare, who was the most... He wasn't exactly the most efficient writer.
Precision is the thing.
They want
language to communicate very precisely and not be vague or obfuscating. And that's why I think there's a strong
tradition made up
in the
loads
UK.
Of words.
Yes, he did. But they were brilliant. I mean,
he wasn't writing in text.
Goodness, we now have a great orator as American president, as opposed to his predecessor, who was the guy who basically said, "Do not misunderstimate me." I mean, to misunderstimate me is an extraordinary word.
Stop. I think we happily fail to reach a conclusion on that.
Great.
So next question. Next question, which I've just come up with, which is this, right? Should you give money to homeless people in the street?
Oh, goodness, no.
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 Mum, no. Why? Why not?
Because if you give it directly to them, they will use it for, you know, if they're probably on drugs or something or drinking alcohol.
Yeah, what
if
are you doing it, with your
you
wages?
If you give it to them, they will use it on that.
But what I
prefer to do is to give my money to an organised...
Well, how would you feel if your boss said, I'm not going to pay this week because you can only spend it on drink?
What I prefer to do is to give it to an organisation that will... help these people, but, so I give my money to shelter.
But Mum, that homeless guy on the street, what does he really want? Does he want some orange juice or does he want some heroin? I think he wants the heroin.
So I'm supposed to give it to him? Something that's bad for him?
That's pretty much what he needs.
I'd rather give it to shelter and they will help him in other ways to sort his life out.
Okay.
So, and I do give money to shelter every year, every week, every month.
Right. And every week.
And every week. And
every
year.
On a monthly basis.
As a bank
transfer.
Yes.
James, have you got a point of view on this?
I don't have a definitive point of view because each person's different, aren't they? And who am I to deny this guy his can of beer if he's down and out, you know? If he wants to scab a quid off me and I'm feeling a bit flush that day, why not?
A lot of idiomatic language being used here. Anyway, carry on.
So generally I don't, but occasionally I do give money to homeless people because, okay, it may not help them in the long run, but it might make their evening a little bit better.
Okay.
Yes, but that might make their situation worse.
Might exacerbate.
Exactly.
Things. Okay, Dad?
Well, it's a very good question because we all have this dilemma when, you know, someone... is begging and you feel that you can give them a small amount of cash and it won't hurt you and it'll help them. But I agree with my wife, Gillian, that we shouldn't do this because I think beggars on the street is some kind of visible measure of whether you're a civilised society or whether you're not. And I think that it should be part of the state system to make sure that people in serious need are looked after, and we pay plenty of tax for that to happen, and that, as has been said earlier, we don't know what they're going to do with this money we give them, and I don't want to encourage it, I don't like it, I don't like to see beggars on the street, I don't think they should be there, and I feel we should give our money to the state and to other organisations, such as Shelter, which is a brilliant charity, to organise the methods to stop people having to sit in the street and say, please can you give me a bit of change. It's humiliating for them and it's also embarrassing for us.
Okay, great. Thanks Tony Blair. Dad. Thanks, Dad.
How dare you.
I think that was a good argument though.
Yeah,
agree with that.
Very, very well put. Okay, next question. If a tree falls in the forest and there's no one there, does it make a noise?
Yes, it does.
Of course it does.
Of course
Why?
It does.
How do you know?
End of argument.
How do you know?
Because it fucking does.
All right, fine. Next question. Okay, why don't the English learn another language?
We do.
Why are we bad at learning other languages?
Je suis parlez-vous français? It's excellent.
That's not French. That's just noises that sound.
Qu'est-ce que tu as dit? Nous parlons le français.
See, what you're doing now is just embarrassing yourself. Because what you're speaking is not French. It's just a noise that sounds like French.
The reason we don't learn a foreign language is because we... it was our empire that...
Stop talking about the bloody empire.
That's what it's all about. It's about empires. And the British Empire spread all over the world and it taught English all over the world. And so now loads of people learn English all over the world because the next empire is the American Empire and they also speak a form of English. And so everybody speaks English.
Mm.
I guess it's
so we don't need to speak another language.
It's down to necessity, like you say. But when I go on a holiday, I do make every effort to speak in their language. And I'm not bad at Spanish after I've been there.
You are bad at Spanish. I mean, compared... Come on. Like,
I'm bad at Spanish, but I try.
We're talking degrees of badness, right?
Yeah. All right.
And I'm not one of these people that just points at the menu and shouts in English. I try every effort to...
You just
eat,
don't shout.
...the Spanish food, speak as much Spanish as possible. Even if it's very limited, I will go to every effort I can to speak
All right.
In the language on the country I'm in. Right.
So, Professor Thompson, any?
Well, yeah, yes.
Thoughts on this?
Professor Thompson does agree that there's not much point in talking about history and how it happened. We are where we are, and in a globalised society, English has risen to the top as being the language of business, the language of tourism, and the media. It's extraordinary how English is now used by so many different
societies. Yeah, but why don't the English speak another language?
Well, that's the reason we don't. That, as James said, you try and, you know, go to another country, and I'm often in Belgium, and I try to speak French when I'm in Brussels.
We don't.
It just doesn't work. Yeah. They reply to me in English because everybody can speak English.
It's like when I lived in Japan, I used to try and order my dinner in Japanese. And I would order it in Japanese, and then they would repeat the order back to me in English.
That's right.
Because no one wanted me to speak Japanese. They all wanted to try and use the opportunity to speak English.
Well, you find that everywhere, and I work a lot now in the Balkans, in Serbia, and Croatia, and other places. Exactly the same.
Every opportunity
to speak English to you.
Yeah.
So it's not an incentive to learn Serbian.
Right.
And it is a bit embarrassing. I wish I was better at languages, other languages, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's a shame how, you know, we don't have as good language skills as other countries do. It is a bit of a shame.
Mum, can you get me a beer? Thanks. All right.
What's that in Japanese?
Let's see. Biru onegai shimasu. Okaasan, biru onegai shimasu.
Sounds a bit rude.
I don't know. Well, I don't speak Japanese,
Fred. Un bier, s'il vous plaît.
Un bier, s'il vous plaît.
Un bier, s'il vous plaît.
Yeah.
Why is beer there, then?
It's un
plat. I don't know if that's right.
Well, no, it is. You're right.
Anyway, let's not get caught up in some sort of...
Because there's a lot of estrogen in beer.
French.
It's feminine.
French not grammatical Russian debate. Right, next question.
Spanish, isn't
next it? Question, all right. Is it ever justifiable to commit an act of murder?
Yes, it is.
Murder.
Is it under what conditions is it justifiable?
Murder.
Murder. The intentional killing of another person.
Murder is not self-defense.
It could be manslaughter.
Murder. It can be self-defense.
No, this becomes manslaughter.
Well, no. What you get is murder is the intentional taking of someone else's life.
All right,
it can be reduced
definition
to manslaughter with mitigating circumstances, for example.
Yeah, yeah. Some maniac is about to kill you and kill him.
But what about war? Isn't that murder?
Well, is it? I don't know. Does that count as murder?
No.
In a war?
So I don't think so. So you bandy this word murder about without knowing what it means.
I'm opening up a question to debate. Can you open that bottle for me?
No one's going to listen to
that. Are you saying thou shalt not kill? Is that what you're saying?
I'm just asking, is it ever justifiable to take someone's life?
That's not the same as murder.
Okay.
If somebody saying they were going to kill my family, and I had the opportunity to kill them to stop them doing that, then yes, it's completely justified.
So do you reckon that you you wouldn't be punished?
Well, no, legally, that's another matter. You're getting very confused here. You're mixing moral issues up with legal issues.
Yeah, but they're kind of the same.
No, they're not the same thing. No, they're not.
No, it's not at all.
Morality is down to an individual's life. Morality is down to an individual's point of view.
The law should reflect what's right and what's reasonable.
It's extremely sophisticated on this matter, with lots and lots of precedent. And basically, the circumstances in which you take someone else's life are very measured against precedent and cause and effect and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, taking someone else's life can, of course, be justified in certain circumstances.
All right. That's interesting.
Personal morality and the law.
I mean, if someone comes at you, you know, with a knife...
What do you think?
And you kill them.
No, I'm just...
Well, self-defence.
Saying that the law takes these things into account and that having personal morality in the law is totally separate things. I don't know, are they? Are they
separate things?
Because as an example, do you think it's immoral to smoke cannabis once every now and then? Because according to the law, it's completely illegal.
No, I don't. So the law and personal morality
aren't the same thing, are they?
It would be too reductive.
We're not being reductive. It's just an obvious example to prove to you that law and personal morality are completely different.
Yeah.
Are you thinking in terms of the burglar who was killed by...
Possibly, yeah, the burglar.
Very badly injured by the people he burgled.
There was a... I heard about a story in the news about this woman in America who was on the phone to the police because there was someone trying to break into her house, and she had a gun, and this person was sort of trying to break the door down, and they eventually threw a... kind of picnic table through her French windows, and she shot the guy.
Mm.
What's that?
Where's this? Where's, which country?
Well, in America.
I think that's manslaughter.
I think that would be self-defense. Especially under American law, because American law is quite different to British.
Yeah, and they're allowed.
You're legally allowed to shoot someone on your property if they're there without your consent.
Mm.
Whereas we don't have that law here. Mm. You'd have to. It'd be a much more complicated process of arguing that individual case, whereas in America it's quite cut and dry.
Mm.
Someone breaks into your house, you can legally shoot them dead.
But the case that happened recently in this country where a burglar broke into someone's house...
A gang of three, actually.
Okay, a gang of three people broke into someone's house and tied them up and it was horrible.
Threatened them with knives.
It was horrible, it was a horrible offence.
Where's the money?
But the guy... It wasn't a life-threatening situation. He went on a revenge mission.
He did.
And then that's killed the guy,
they didn't actually kill him. And they pursued him. Battered him so that he's brain dead.
And they
but it wasn't even that evening, was it? It was
and then he's late.
You can't justify that. You can't condone that.
No, that's definitely...
It's murder.
Yeah. Well, except he wasn't killed, but it's definitely a crime.
Certainly. That's a completely different matter.
Okay. Final question. Let's see. Final question is the music of the 1960s better than the music of the current times?
Yeah, of course.
Yes.
Well, there's no... I mean, that's there's no personal viewpoint, isn't it? Personal viewpoint. They're better. You can't quantify.
Well, they were
that
the
way. It's personal opinion, isn't it?
Mm.
So you can't answer that question.
I think you can measure it by public opinion. So... Imagine there was a survey which said, which of the greatest...
But are we imagining the results of this survey as well?
We are.
Wait a minute, Dan.
Wait.
Everybody who's on this planet...
So is this a representative sample of the UK?
Wait a minute. An imaginary survey is not...
We give them 1,000 tracks and you can vote for them. And I think that,
You imagine that most of the people who are on
the Rolling Stones and various others would probably come out.
I think people of a certain age would.
The enormous bands.
I think people below a certain age would vote for things like Britney Spears and Miley Cyrus and Lou and whatever they're into. Whatever they're into.
And the latest.
Power falling. Well, okay, so we can't measure it, it's just subjective, and the answer is, of course, the 60s are by far.
They're not. Very, very limited. So as far as guitar music.
Limited?
Yeah.
Very limited.
Think of George Harrison's guitar work in early Beatles tracks, and think of the guitar.
Hang on a minute.
But I mean, this is the same decade. The style of music's massively limited.
Slow hand and
he wasn't in the '60s.
Did he?
Eric Clapton. He was.
Oh, right. I thought he was a '70s.
I don't think it's cut and dry, to be honest. Yeah. I think you've got rosy.
No.
There's all sorts of musical stuff going on now that was blown people's minds back then.
Yeah,
really.
It's a totally different genre of music.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Like, for example,
Strawberry Fields. The rest of my life, I'd be flipping sick of it.
Come on.
Right, okay, that ends the conversation. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, so that's a typical kind of Christmas argument with my family, very typical for that kind of situation. Now, I told you that I would sort of deal with some of the language after that, but to be honest, there's absolutely so much language. I've just filled nearly 3 pages of notes just from listening to that. What I'm going to do is, instead of spending all my time just sort of explaining bits of language now, I'm going to actually write all of these down and put them all on the... I'm going to put them all on the website so you can actually read them all. I might talk about a few of them now, but I can't talk about them all. But I will write them all down. So, let's see, it's the correct form of English, So the first question was, what's better, British English or American English? And of course, it doesn't really matter, they're both equally valid. But some of the things that were said was, it's the correct form of English, so all the Americans are getting it wrong, are they? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Since then we've changed. Let Dad clear this up. So if someone clears something up, I said, let Dad clear this up. So if you clear something up, it means you clarify it. So let Dad clear this up. Let Dad clarify this. He said, there's a strong feeling that American English is sloppy. Sloppy means it makes mistakes and it's kind of got errors in it and it's a bit careless. Careless and with mistakes. Sloppy. I'm saying that there is a view, but it's not logical. Okay, it's two cultures divided by a common language, or two cultures separated by a common language. That's a common expression that people say about the relationship between American culture and British culture, that they're two cultures separated by a common language. And it's a kind of ironic expression. It just means that although Americans and the British have a similar language or the same language, we're still completely different cultures, just as different as another culture that would speak a different language, for example. The only thing is we just happen to speak the same language, but the two cultures are really different. So we say there are two cultures divided by a common language. Someone said, I reckon British people are just snobbish. If you're snobbish, it means you kind of look down your nose at people. You think you're better than other people, and you cast judgments on people who you think are below you. The only thing that bugs me, if something bugs you, it really annoys you or irritates you, but it's an American expression. So it's interesting that my brother used an American expression. The only thing that bugs me is when Americans tell me that I'm doing it wrong. So it's quite interesting. Okay, so American culture has been built on, this is quite funny, my dad was saying, American culture has been built on enterprise, individuality, and then my brother said, and guns. And then my dad said, and go-getting. And go-getting is when you're outgoing and you're entrepreneurial and you go out to get something in order to achieve something. So if you're a go-getter, it means you're a keen, enthusiastic person. So he said, American culture has been built on enterprise, individuality, go-getting and guns. Well, my brother said guns as a joke, and then I said, yeah, go-getting guns, meaning let's go get some guns, just as a bit of a joke. The culture back home is about precision. The next question was, should you give money to homeless people? And I think my mum said, they're probably on drugs. So you'd say on drugs. If someone is taking drugs, you'd say that they are on drugs, right? So homeless people might be on drugs. Let's see, arguing about whether you should give money to homeless people or not. My brother said, I don't have a definitive point of view. So a definitive is like a definite, you know, a definite point of view or opinion. And then he said, who am I to deny this guy his can of beer? So if you deny someone something, in this case, deny him his can of beer. So if you deny someone something, it means you don't let them have it. Okay, so my brother was talking about giving stuff to homeless people, and he said, who am I to deny this guy his can of beer if he's down and out? If you're down and out, it means you're homeless. Down and out. So if you're a homeless person, you could be down and out. So who am I to deny this guy his can of beer if he's down and out? If he wants to scab a quid off me, to scab something is to, like, basically beg for something and get it. So if you scab a quid off someone, it means you sort of beg someone to give you £1. A quid is slang for a pound, right? So let's see, if he wants to scab a quid off me and I'm feeling a bit flush that day, why not? Well, if someone wants to scab a quid off me, if they want to, you know, ask me for a pound, and I'm feeling a bit flush, if you feel flush, it means you feel like you've got money. You know, you feel like you've got some money in your pocket. So you feel flush means you've got some money with you. So if he wants to scab a quid off me, and I'm feeling a bit flush that day, why not? So he's saying if he's got some money in his pocket and someone asks him for a pound, why not? He'd give it to him. So the next question is a very very common philosophical question. It's a conceptual philosophical question about the nature of knowledge and empiricism, right? And it's, if a tree falls in the forest and there's nobody there, does it make a noise? Very, very old question. It's like one of those questions like, what's the sound of one hand clapping? Or what came first, the chicken or the egg? Well, if a tree falls in the forest and there's nobody there, does it make a noise? The idea is that if you say, well, yes, it does make a noise, you'd have to say, well, how do you know? Because no one was there to record the noise. No one heard it or experienced the noise. How can we be sure that the tree makes the noise when no one's there? Well, the fact is we sort of trust in science, don't we? And you have to make kind of evaluations and guesses or theories. So our theory is that the tree does make a noise when we're not there. But there is an element that says you can't prove it unless you, you know, unless you're actually there. I mean, even if you leave a microphone there, it's the same thing as someone being there, in effect. And of course, my parents and my family they've heard this question many times before. And I think my brother said something like, "Does it make a noise? Of course it fucking does," as just a kind of stupid thing that he would say. So the fourth question: why don't the English learn another language, and why are we bad at learning languages? And my mum started talking about the empire again, and my brother said, "Stop talking about the bloody empire." So, bloody is a kind of swear word that you can use there. It's not too bad, but it's still a swear word. Let's not get caught up in some sort of French grammatical debate. If you get caught up in something, it means you get deeply involved in it and it kind of wastes a bit of time. It prevents you from moving forward. So if you get caught up in a debate about French grammar. The next question was, is it ever justifiable to commit an act of murder? Is it ever justifiable to commit an act of murder? Justifiable is an adjective. It means that you can justify something. If you can give good reasons for doing it, then you can justify it, and it is justifiable. Is it ever justifiable to commit an act of murder? Commit is the verb we use with many crimes. You commit murder, commit theft, commit robbery, commit fraud, and so on. So is it justifiable to commit an act of murder? We then started talking about other crimes like manslaughter. Manslaughter is a form of killing, but it's less serious than murder because you remove the element of intention. So it's like killing someone, it's your responsibility, but you didn't intend to do it. So that's manslaughter. You commit manslaughter. And sometimes murder can be reduced to manslaughter if there are mitigating circumstances. That means the charge of murder could be dropped and made less serious and made into a manslaughter charge. And then if there are mitigating circumstances. So mitigating circumstances are things that make a crime less serious. For example, if it's an act of self-defense, that would be a mitigating circumstance or mitigating factor, right? So manslaughter, does that count as murder in a war? If something counts as something, it means it's valid as something. So for example, does this Scottish £10 note count as currency here? And yes, of course it does. So to take someone's life, that's another way of saying to kill someone, to murder someone, to take someone's life. Then we had a big argument, a big angry argument about whether morality and the law are the same thing. It was a big passionate argument between me, my brother and my dad. And I think probably my brother and my dad were right in this case. It was a big argument. Are morality, our personal morality and the law the same thing? Oh, big fight, big argument thing. And then we talked about a few other things. Okay. Question number six was, is the music of the 1960s better than the music of current times? And my dad and mum think that it is. They think it's the best music ever. So my dad at the beginning said, no contest. no contest. And if it's no contest, it means that one thing wins really easily. So win something really easily. It's no contest. We win easily. So my dad said no contest. It's personal opinion, my brother said. Then my dad started talking about some imaginary survey where enough people were asked what the best music was. They would all choose the 60s. But this is an imaginary survey, and that doesn't count as evidence in an argument. You can't start citing imaginary results or made-up statistics. That's ridiculous. Even though, probably a lot of the time, statistics are probably just invented. In fact, I think it's 89.7% of all statistics are just made up on the spot. Ha 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 ha. Very funny joke, which you probably didn't get. In which case, let me just run it by you again. What I'm doing here is I've just told a joke, and you probably didn't find it funny, which is fine, that's okay. But what I'm now going to do is sort of dissect the joke in order to explain what the joke was. And this is actually a really bad idea, because if you explain a joke, then it's not funny anymore. There's an old analogy, which is like explaining humour is like dissecting a frog. No one really learns anything and the frog dies. But nevertheless, I'm going to explain this joke. And what was the joke? 89.7% of all statistics are just made up on the spot. So, and obviously I just made that statistic up on the spot. That's the joke. To make something up on the spot is just to invent something, create something instantly. So 89.7% of all statistics are just made up on the spot. Ha 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 ha. Right. So, big survey thing. My brother, I think, said, I don't think it's cut and dry. If something is cut and dry, it means it's clear, it's black and white. Cut and dry, black and white. And if it's not cut and dry, then it's ambiguous or vague or grey. There's a grey area, for example. That's something that's vague or ambiguous, difficult to see, difficult to understand. Whereas if it's clear, then it's cut and dry or black and white. Okay? And in English, we do say black and white in that order. We don't say white and black. No, it's always black and white. I don't think it's cut and dry. It's not black and white. Okay, and I think that's pretty much the end of that. So, as I said, I will print all of those bits of language and more on the web page, so you can check them out. Now, I thought that with my family this time, I would record them doing some speaking exercises. Now, at school, we often give students tasks. For example, to talk about a subject for a couple of minutes without stopping. And, of course, in many Cambridge exams, you have to do a little short presentation where you talk for a minute or 2 minutes about a given subject. So I thought I would do a similar thing with the members of my family. Of course, they're native English speakers, so they should be able to do it, really. But I thought I'd make it a little bit more difficult by giving them 3 minutes, not two. You get two in the IELTS exam. In my exam, you get 3 minutes. And I've randomly chosen some topics, and I put them in a hat, and then I asked my parents and my brother to pick a topic and talk about it for 3 minutes. And there were some rules. The rules were basically that you can't stop. You can't stop talking. You can't pause or hesitate for a long time. And you have to stick to the topic. You can't drift off and talk about different subjects. You've got to stick to your topic. And you have to just keep talking without repeating yourself too much until the end. Now, this kind of exercise can be quite challenging. It's difficult to just keep talking and talking and talking and to make sense clearly for like 3 minutes. So it's quite good practice. It's quite a good idea for you to do that. And another thing I've noticed when I'm playing this game with people is that there's one way that people sort of manage to get around this, and that's by listing things. So you hear, if people were to talk about football clubs, they would say, so football is a game which is played by teams, for example, Manchester United, Liverpool, Chelsea, Aston Villa, Birmingham, and Manchester City, you know, that kind of thing, listing. That's like cheating, really. So watch out for listing and try to avoid doing that. See if you can identify when my brother or my parents start listing things as a way of kind of cheating a little bit. So those are the rules, and 3 minutes. Four people, because I'm involved in this too. So have a listen to this, and you'll be able to read some notes on the web page as before. So enjoy this little conversation game.
Okay.
Three things.
So hello, we're ready to play the game. Let's introduce the players. I'm going to start. My name's Luke Thompson. I'm an English teacher from London, and I'm the guy who does that amazing podcast which everyone is listening to, called Luke's English Podcast.
Hello, I'm Jill Thompson. I'm the mother of the very modest Luke Thompson, and I work in a charity bookshop.
Hello, I'm Rick Thompson. I'm Luke's father. We live in the middle of England, in a place called Solihull, and I teach people broadcast technique.
Hello, I'm James Thompson. I live in London, and I'm Luke's brother.
Okay, right, those are the players. Let's start the game. We know the rules. I've already established those. So who's going to go first in this game? Is Rick Thompson going to go first? Okay, so he's picking a name out of the hat. He's picking a word out of the hat.
And the word is shopping.
Okay, so Rick Thompson, you're going to talk about shopping for 3 minutes. Are you ready?
Yes.
Let the games begin.
All right, well, it's a very interesting word, shopping. It's a pastime that seems to divide the nation, perhaps on men-women lines. I mean, a lot of women talk about shopping heaven, and shopping heaven seems to me to be a contradiction in terms, because obviously if you have to go out shopping into some kind of crowded place, moving from crowded shop to crowded shop, being confronted with all sorts of things you don't really want, it's more like shopping hell than shopping heaven. We've just had Christmas, and the newspaper's been full of all the frantic rush for the sales just immediately after Christmas. And the most famous shopping street in Britain is Oxford Street in London, which has been a prestige shopping street for a long time, and all the best shops have their best branches down Oxford Street. Now, pictures of Oxford Street completely full of people, crammed, so full it was almost dangerous. And then, you know, just to make things even worse, they had a sort of horrible crime in the middle of Oxford Street, all this shopping, where somebody got stabbed and they had to seal off half the street. But before that had happened, we saw pictures of people rushing in through the front doors of Selfridges and going straight to the bargains they wanted to get and emerging with about 15 bags they could hardly walk. They must have spent an absolute fortune, and they all have big smiles on their faces. Seems to me it's an absolutely horrible thing to do. Shopping, for me, is simply something you have to get over as quickly as possible, as efficiently as possible, and if at all possible, get somebody else to do it for you. And I like to nip out to the local shops. I don't like big supermarkets or big chains very much. I like local shops, part of the community, and the best communities do have a nice little row of shops where people know you and where it's quite a comfortable experience to do the shopping. So I think that at this point,
1 minute.
I just thought I'd say that, of course, I'm a typical man, and a lot of men don't particularly like shopping. And I know that women do like to go and look at nice clothes, for example. And there is, I can understand, a kind of an appeal of looking at what the latest fashions are. And people seem to like these accessories. Women like to have the right kind of handbag. It's got to be a designer handbag with the right name on. And shoes. Well, I mean, if you've got Jimmy Choo shoes, obviously that increases your status and everybody looks at you admiringly, or so they think. But of course it isn't true that people who feel they must have an expensive designer handbag must be somehow slightly inadequate, because how can possibly having a designer handbag make you a more desirable and interesting person? I mean, I would have thought quite the opposite. The people who are most interesting are the ones who don't bother to go shopping for expensive items.
Wow. Well done. What do you think, everyone? Think you did well?
Very good.
Yeah, very good job. And you've timed it perfectly at 3 minutes. It's amazing. It's almost like you've been speaking English for quite a few years.
No, it's also useful to have a countdown clock on the table so that you can see how long you've got.
No, it
wouldn't be fair otherwise. You have no idea how long you've got to go if you don't have it there.
So who's going to go next, I wonder? Is it Mum? Okay. So, Gillian Thompson, your subject is?
Oh, goodness. My subject is the royal family.
Okay, so you've got 3 minutes. Are you ready?
I am.
Okay, off you go.
Right, well, we have a royal family here. The royal family has been in the news this Christmas because one of its members, the Duke of Edinburgh, the Queen's husband, was taken into hospital, I think it was on Christmas Eve, because he had pains in his chest. He was taken to a hospital in Cambridge, where they discovered there was a problem with one of his arteries leading to his heart, and he had an operation. And he didn't return home until the day after Boxing Day, I think, which meant that he missed the traditional Christmas that the royal family always has in Sandringham, in Norfolk, one of their palaces. And it's a tradition at Christmas that the royal family is always filmed going to church on Christmas morning at the church in Sandringham. And he was absent from the party this year. But someone who was there for the first time was Catherine, who married William in April of this year. And that caused much excitement, of course. There are many members of the royal family. The heir to the throne is the Queen's son, Prince Charles, who was married to Lady Diana, who came to a rather sad end. He is now married to Camilla, and he has two sons, William and Andrew. William and Harry. Andrew is his brother, his younger brother, and his other brother is Edward. And his sister is Anne. Now, the royal family has been an institution in England for many, many centuries, and it's a hereditary institution, although there have been one or two breaks in heredity over the centuries where the crown has been possibly usurped by people who aren't necessarily in the direct line, but generally speaking, it's heredity. And the Queen's father was George VI, and there was a very successful film last year made about his life. He had a lot of problems in his life. He was a very nervous man, and he found it very difficult to speak in public. And the film was a very good illustration of that problem and how he overcame it with the help of a speech therapist. It also showed, at the same time, the sort of hidebound and very formal life that he had to lead, and how difficult that can be for a human living in that sort of strange, heightened family circumstance. But the Queen seems to be very able to cope with it all, and she has been a great success.
So, 3 minutes.
Very good.
What do you think?
Very good.
Yeah?
I couldn't do that.
Very good. Mm-hmm. It's better to keep going for 3 minutes.
Yeah, it is quite hard to keep going without stopping.
Very difficult.
Okay, so it's James Thompson's turn now. Let's see, what's your subject?
Reading books.
Reading books, the fascinating, dramatic, exciting and glamorous world of reading books. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, well, if you'd like to begin.
Okay, reading books is a pastime which many people enjoy. It involves picking up a book, opening it at the first page, skipping past the kind of legal information and starting to read. Normally, chapter one is the start of a book. You read the words, mentally work out what they mean, and string it together in your head as a story, usually, or it can be fiction or non-fiction. Fiction books are stories made up by the author. They're not based on real events. That's the definition of fiction. Whereas non-fiction would be more factual-based book. The most popular type of fiction book is a novel. And I don't know why they're called novels. Sorry. Probably something to do with Latin. A novel that a lot of people like is Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. That's something I read when I was a child, and it's written by a guy called Douglas Adams, who's a very good writer. It's
you get the impression that it was a sci-fi book, but it's really more a philosophy book, a book about philosophy and the world, and it's very funny, but it's also very true in lots of places, about an ordinary man who finds out his best friend is actually an alien and is saved from death, and in fact the whole destruction of the planet by his friend at the very last minute. That's an example of one book. But the subject here I see is reading books, not just books itself. So I shouldn't just talk about books, I should talk about reading books. So obviously, the language I read in is English. There are lots of other languages. Some Japanese books are read the other way round, so the ones to the English as we know it. So they start from what we think of as the back and move the other direction. You can read... Books are being replaced in some people's minds by things like Kindles and iBooks, or whatever they're called, which are electronic books, which you can download thousands of books in a very small file size. I still like the traditional book, because if you lose it, it doesn't really matter. It's something quite nice about the paper and ink of a good book, or even an average book. They're cheap, they can be read in the bath, they can be read on the train, you don't need a power source, they're better for the environment, and they're just slightly more romantic than an electronic gadget. So all in all, reading books is something everyone should do, and do more of.
Okay, you sort of started to stray off the topic slightly by going into a detailed description of your favourite book, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Well, I was
Galaxy.
Just filling time.
You're it. Filling time, yeah, that's right. And but, yeah, good.
I found the subjects a little bit restrictive. It was just reading books rather than books.
Right. So it's more about the process, the experience of reading books rather than books in themselves.
I think I could have done better with a bit more planning.
That's a good point, though, isn't it? That the electronic books are... I'm growing very quickly.
Yeah.
But will it mean the end of the traditional book?
Mm. Who knows? But that's the main debate around books at the moment, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Electronic books versus normal paper-based books. I think it's my turn.
It is.
Does this subject? I'm last. Does this mean that everyone expects me to be better
at this?
You're the professional.
Because I'm the one who started the game, and because
I invented the game, obviously you think you're going to be good at it.
Not necessarily, no. No, it's not necessarily.
Get on with it.
Okay, so my subject is bird watching.
Ah.
Okay, so I'm ready, so you can start the clock. Right, bird watching is a hobby which many people in the United Kingdom love to do. It might not be as popular in other countries. In fact, I've got friends who come from other countries and they don't understand why bird watching is considered to be such an enjoyable time pursuit. Okay? But in the UK, it's a very popular thing. It might be because in Britain we have lots of different types of birds and lots of migratory birds that come through the British Isles at various different types of the year. And so... for example, in the springtime, we get lots of new birds coming into the country as they pass through on their migratory paths, right? But bird watching could be considered to be a bit of a geeky pursuit. It might be the sort of thing that a geek would do, someone a nerd, that kind of character, someone who hasn't really got much else going on in their lives, and they just love to... find out about some very specialised subject, for example, the various different types of bird species that exist in one area of the country. But it's not true. It's not sad, it's not geeky, it's actually very interesting. And there's a lot of pleasure to be gained from, for example, going out into the countryside on a beautiful day, wandering out into the countryside with your binoculars in your hand and looking at all the various different types of bird life that you might find in the countryside where you happen to be walking on that particular day, right? So bird watching is something that we grew up doing in the family. That's why, obviously, I've said it's not a sad thing. In fact, it's...
Repetition.
Keep going.
I've been accused of repetition. I don't know if this means I should stop or I'm going to carry on.
Proceed.
Okay. Something that we grew up doing... And Dad was always a big bird watcher, and He's seen lots of birds, lots of different types of birds. There are various types of birds that you can identify when you're doing bird watching. My favourite birds are the birds of prey. Those are those birds like kestrels or hawks, sparrowhawks, different birds that eat other birds. I think they're the most exciting ones because it's brilliant when you see a bird of prey in the countryside because usually they're trying to kill and eat another animal. And that's quite exciting. It's a bit like watching Top Gun, but instead of looking at fighter jets, you're looking at birds trying to kill each other. And I think that's exciting. It's an amazing moment when you're out there somewhere and you see, for example, a kestrel hovering in the air because it's trying to catch a little mouse. Some poor defenseless mouse on the ground is about to get eaten and digested by a majestic kestrel. It's amazing. That's it. Time's up.
Sorry to interrupt you there, but I thought that was part of the game to point out when you'd repeated yourself and you were going on about how sad or not sad it was, and you said that twice.
I said that twice. Okay, so maybe I might
am I being a bit harsh?
Yeah, no, we didn't really understand what to do if we thought you were erring.
And I'm sure nobody else ever repeated themselves or strayed off the subject at all.
Sarcasm. I think there was a bit of repetition all round. Maybe I repeated myself more than other people, but in the end it doesn't matter because it's just a stupid game and no one really cares.
But it's very good.
That's it. Maybe we'll do another game another time, one that will be a bit better.
A bit more exciting
than this one.
Hope it's useful to hear how people actually talk.
Yeah, well, me too. I hope we can extract some small, tiny value from what has been basically a fruitless waste of time.
I think next time you should find people with more diverse accents, and you could get a Brummie, you know, someone talks like people do from Birmingham, like this, and that might be more interesting to your listeners than four people with similar accents.
Yeah, but most of my listeners really want to be able to speak, I imagine, in the way that we do.
Yeah, but they also want to understand different accents.
They do. They want
otherwise, they're going to be freaked out if they meet a Brummie.
If they come to England, they meet a Brummie. They'll be like, what is that?
What language is this?
Were they speaking English? I don't even understand if that was a language. Because, you know, they sort of kept speaking like this. It didn't make any sense at all. I didn't know what they were talking about. That's a Birmingham accent. Yeah, okay, I think I'm going to draw this whole exercise to a close. Let's stop doing this before we waste any more of anyone else's time. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for taking part.
Thank you.
Members of my family.
Right. Thank you, bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So there you are, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoyed listening to my family talking about various things and being quite sort of funny and interesting. I wonder what you thought of their attempt at speaking for 3 minutes. Quite interesting. Maybe a little bit of listing going on there. I think my mum listed members of the royal family. You might have noticed that. So please do check the webpage, which of course is http://www.teacherluke.podomatic.com. Check that out and you should be able to find notes relating to this episode. You can also visit me on Facebook because I've got a Facebook page. So just go to Facebook and type in Luke's English Podcast and you'll find that there. I post notes and various things. I share videos and things on there sometimes. So check it out. That's becoming more and more popular all the time. I'm also on Twitter, of course, and you can find me. My username is @EnglishPodcast. @EnglishPodcast. So check me out because I tweet things sometimes. I tweet little bits of language, some little bits of advice, some jokes sometimes. So check me out on Twitter. And of course, I'm also on YouTube and I've got a channel there. You can just find me. It's Luke's English Podcast on YouTube. And the YouTube page is a big success and I'm currently approximately at 325,000 video views. I've got about 10 or 11 videos on my YouTube page, so you can check them out. I specialise on YouTube in presenting videos of interviews with native English speakers. And I recently uploaded an episode in which I speak to members of the public, talk to people in the street about the royal family and what they think about the British royal family. And I think it's a very interesting series of videos. So you should check it out. Don't forget, of course, that you can donate money to Luke's English Podcast. I need donations every month to allow me to pay for this service. So if you'd like to donate, just find one of the donate buttons on PayPal. You can see that on the webpage, teacherluke.podomatic.com. Go there, you'll see some buttons, yellow buttons that say donate, and you just click onto that, and that's PayPal, which is internationally known as a very, very safe way to send money over the internet. And you could just make a small donation. You need to enter some credit card details, but it's very simple, and it's a very, very safe site, so you'll have no problem. And you can actually use PayPal in the future when you buy things on eBay or when you purchase things on other websites. You can use eBay, you can use PayPal to do that too. So it's a very useful site to be registered with, as a matter of fact. So if you feel like making a donation, then please go ahead. And I'd like to imagine that perhaps you're in a shop somewhere, in a bookshop maybe, and you pick up a box and it says Luke's English Podcast on the front of the box. And listed in the contents, you'll find nearly 100 episodes of English language teaching available for you. Now, how much would you pay for that box? Bear in mind that the box would also include pages and pages and pages of notes and transcripts and vocabulary. How much do you think that box would be worth? Well, just make a sort of generous guess, and maybe consider just throwing a little bit of cash in my direction just to help me continue doing this. I do appreciate any donations I get. They make me feel all warm and happy inside because it allows me to continue to do more episodes of Luke's English Podcast. Please stay tuned in the future for more content. But for now, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening, and bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.podomatic.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.